Are you a philosopher? You may not be one professionally, but you can apply the thinking techniques of philosophers to perform better at whatever job you do. That's the idea behind How to Think Like a Philosopher, 12 Key Principles for More Humane, Balanced, and Rational Thinking by Julian Baggini. Julian is the founding editor of The Philosopher's Magazine and specializes in bringing the great ideas of philosophy to a general audience. Here he is with 5 key insights from his book.
Hello, I'm Julian Baggini, and I'm a writer, philosopher, and co-founder of The Philosopher's Magazine. From decades of reading about, talking with, and interviewing leading philosophers, I've distilled the key critical thinking lessons into my book, How to Think Like a Philosopher, or at least How to Think Like the Better Ones. I'd like to share 5 key insights from that book with you now. Insight 1. Good thinking is mainly about paying attention. Philosophy is often said to be about argument, but many of the greatest philosophers have simply noticed what others have missed. Think of how both David Hume and the Buddha observed that there is no singular, unified inner I that constitutes our essential self. Lack of attention also leads us to jump to conclusions about what follows from our observations. Why is it that half a century after the height of the civil rights movement, there was still a need to start the Black Lives Matter movement? Why is it that decades after women won the vote, there is still systemic misogyny in every democratic society? It's not for an absence of cogent arguments. That people should have equal rights and opportunities, irrespective of their sex, skin colour, or ethnic background, has not been seriously contested for decades. But these principles, which almost everyone signs up to, haven't fully cut through the layers of prejudice and ignorance that centuries of oppression and elite power have wired into the collective psyche. Thinking clearly is one thing, taking something to heart quite another. When we've only thought through an issue at an abstract level, we haven't thought it through enough. For thinking to get out of our heads and into our hearts and actions, it needs to be rooted in close attention to the world, to other people, and how we interact with them. The act of thinking itself is largely about focusing the mind. That's why in many Asian philosophical traditions, we are advised to get into the right frame of mind to think, often with the help of formal exercises like breathing meditation. You need a clear mind and the energy to concentrate. We need to attend to what is actually the case. Otherwise, we only see what we assume is the case. Stripping away our preconceptions is harder than it sounds because most of them are deep and implicit. Many mistakes are made by not distinguishing between what something tells us and what we assume it actually means or what follows from it. And of course, we have to look out for attention hijackers, the things that distract us from seeing clearly or looking at the right things. Finally, we need to attend to what others have to say, especially those whose experiences are close to what it is you are thinking about. We need to respect, but not automatically defer to them. Insight 2. Breadth is depth. Good thinkers are eclectic. They do not restrict themselves to the insights of a narrow form of expertise. They recognize that disciplinary boundaries are not nature's boundaries. They approach every issue from more than just one angle, so they think about the whole of it, not just a part. Specialisation is a result of the relatively recent academicisation of philosophy and other disciplines. Historically, philosophers have cast their nets wide. Aristotle studied nature in a lagoon on the island of Lesbos, not reclining at home in Athens. Spinoza ground lenses. Descartes dissected animals as well as concepts. Hume was better known in his day as a historian than as a philosopher. But doesn't this kind of breadth of thought come at the price of depth of thought? Isn't the choice between being broad and shallow, or narrow and deep? I don't think so. Think about how direction in space is relative. Up and down from one perspective is down and up from another, or sideways. What's to your left is to your right, if you just turn around 180 degrees. Now imagine a graph with two axes, one for breadth and the other for depth. Rotate it 90 degrees. Now, The breadth axis is vertical, suggesting it is really measuring depth, and in a way, it is. You can go deeper into an issue by focusing on one narrow part of it and digging as far as you can, or you can explore all its connections with other things. To call one breadth and the other depth is arbitrary. They are both ways of gaining more understanding. There is a value in what we normally call depth and in what we call breadth. Going wide is not a less rigorous form of thinking than going deep. In fact, often it's more fruitful. We should think broadly without any shame, because breadth of thought is a kind of depth of thought. Insight 3. Language can both help and hinder us. Ludwig Wittgenstein famously wrote, "Philosophical problems arise when language goes on holiday." Well, so do many other problems. When a war is called a special military operation, or an attempt to control the use of narcotics hyperbolically called a war on drugs, what is actually happening in the world is misrepresented. To think well, we have to get our words right, which is why Kongzi, more commonly known in the West as Confucius, said that if he were to govern, the first thing he would do would be to rectify names. In other words, call things what they really are. Subtle inaccuracies can lead to great misconceptions. Recorded crime is not the same as actual crime. Deaths attributed to a cause are not the same as deaths due to that cause. Reported incidents are not the same as actual incidents. Those who control the language often control the debate. Often, terms in a dispute are contested, so simply insisting that they have one of the contested meanings is a powerful way of shutting down debate. Take the question of what is the right way to think about the sex and gender of trans people. On one side, there are some saying a trans man is a man, a trans woman is a woman, period. No debate. On the other, there are some saying that a woman is an adult human biological female, a man is an adult human biological male, period. No debate. But when words are contested, neither side can simply stipulate what they mean. We have to advocate for our preferred usage to bring others in our linguistic community round to our point of view. Words are often ambiguous, and their usages slide over time, sometimes naturally, sometimes to suit people's agendas. We need to take care how we use them and define our terms as clearly as we can. Clear thinking requires as much clarity of language as is possible. Insight 4. Think for yourself, not by yourself. We're often told to think for ourselves. Independence of thought is meant to be the great legacy of the Enlightenment liberation from ecclesiastical and other forms of authority. As Immanuel Kant implored in his essay, What is Enlightenment? Sapere aude, have courage to use your own reason. The ideal of autonomous thought is reflected in the common trope of the lone genius, popular in philosophy, science, and the arts. But psychology and history tell us this is false. Very few geniuses reach their insights without the input of others. And there are numerous experiments that show we are much better at solving many logic tasks when we do so in groups than when we do them alone. We are social thinkers. We cannot do without the expertise of others, and we think better when in dialogue with others. Of course, we can do this badly. There is the curse of groupthink, which not only creates too much consensus and conformity, but can push members of the group to greater extremes. Similarly, there is the trap of going along with received wisdom, or accepting ubiquitous propaganda, whether it's from governments or advertisers. But all these failures are not the result of thinking with others, they are the result of going along with others without thinking. To think well together, we need active strategies to counter conformity. In organisations, leaders need to minimise their involvement and encourage criticism. They should make sure problems are discussed by different independent groups. External expertise should be sought and all alternatives considered. In our own personal lives, we should seek views that differ from our own and come from people outside our own social circles. we should not get all our information from the same source, or those that take a similar stance. We need to be prepared to challenge friends and colleagues, and learn to do it without being aggressive or confrontational. Loyalty, remember, should be reserved for people, not ideas. At the end of the day, the buck does stop with us. Only we can ultimately judge what is true or false, and how confident we can be in those judgments. In that sense, we have no choice but to think for ourselves. But the more we get others to think with us, the better our thinking will be. Insight 5. Character is the secret source of good thinking. It's like good driving. Most motorists know how to change gears, what the speed limits are, and so on. The difference between good and bad drivers is not usually or primarily a matter of principles and techniques. It's the attitude they have to their driving which is essential, how much care and attention they pay, how motivated they are to drive properly, how thoughtful they are to other road users. Similarly, good thinking is as much or maybe even more about attitudes as it is about techniques. Are we sincerely trying to get to the truth? Or are we more motivated to defend our prior convictions? Do we have enough self-knowledge to spot and check the ways we deceive ourselves? Do we really try to listen to others? Or are we only looking out for their weak points so we can discount their disagreements with us? The virtues of thought include sincerity, accuracy, modesty, openness. Putting them into practice is difficult, because implementing a virtue is not a simple matter of avoiding the opposite vice. As both Aristotle and Confucius understood, for almost every virtue there is not an opposite vice, but an excess and a deficiency. Two vices, if you like, either side of the virtue. So generosity is the mean point, the point between profligacy and tight-fistedness. Understanding is the mean point between lack of sympathy and being too indulgent of others. Pride is the mean that lies between self-hatred and arrogance. The same principle applies to the virtues of thinking. We should be precise, but you can be too precise as well as too vague if that precision is bogus, because we simply don't have the ability to be that precise. We should be understanding of views we disagree with, but you can be too understanding as well as too dismissive, to the extent that you simply accept what people say too uncritically. You can think too much for yourself, or you can think too little. This principle of the mean, as it's known in Aristotle's philosophy, is why pretty much every piece of advice about critical thinking comes with a warning not to slavishly follow it. Yes, follow the argument wherever it leads, but don't follow it to absurdity. Question everything, but not always and all the time, or else you'll never make progress. Define your terms, but don't think all terms can be defined precisely. The virtues of thinking require balance and judgment, and for every way of erring, there is an equal and opposite way of going wrong in a different direction. We can apply any critical thinking rule to excess or not enough, depending on the context. This doctrine of the mean is a kind of meta-principle that we should bear in mind at all times. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy thinking together with me in my book, where we discuss many, many other principles of good thinking from philosophers of the past and the present.
Thank you, Julian. That was 5 big ideas from How to Think Like a Philosopher, 12 Key Principles for More Humane, Balanced, and Rational Thinking by Julian Baggini. You might also like our book bite for Julian's earlier book, The Great Guide, what David Hume can teach us about being human and living well. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have an amazing day.